This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of The American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
In the case of the president, do you get a sense that his regular attendance and adherence to the faith resonates with American Catholics?
There is a phrase, a cafeteria Catholic. You choose that which is attractive and dismiss that which is challenging.
We are entering a post-Christian era. We are not going to be able to live off of the inheritance of a Christianity that is being rejected and is being slewed off right now.
There were specific strategies that the church used in many churches to grow the congregations that focused less on discipleship and biblical fidelity and even biblical literacy. And I think that that has produced a large amount of people in our churches that might not even really be Christians.
Easter is a time of triumph and joy. Easter is a time when we can rejoice together that Jesus has conquered death by his death.
I love listening to issues, etc., while riding my bike on the street of Beijing, China.
There are certain things that you should never take at face value, and one of them is any news from the legacy media regarding abortion or abortion statistics or the abortion rate or the safety of abortion. You know that you're getting it filtered through a pro-abortion narrative. There's no doubt about it. So when news comes out regarding abortion, you always have to dig a little deeper. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 11th of April. We'll be talking with Dr. Michael New, getting a roundup of some of recent abortion news, and then Pastor Christopher Heaton joins us to discuss help for those struggling with the sin of pornography. Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Paige Comstock Cunningham Fellow with Americans United for Life, and a columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Before we get into the abortion news, what did you make of President Trump's recent statement on abortion policy?
Sure. Earlier this week, President Trump said that he would not support any kind of a federal abortion ban or federal abortion limit. And I'm disappointed, as are many pro-lifers. I think if we're going to make headway on this issue, you know, I think we need strong leadership from Republican elected officials. And we don't right now have that from President Trump. Like a lot of pro-lifers, I do think the federal government does have a role to play in protecting pre-born children. So I'm really disappointed that President Trump is uninterested in kind of pursuing any federal protections of pre-born children should he be elected president.
It's not an either-or, is it, Dr. New?
No, I mean, I think that we need to protect pre-born children in as many ways as possible. I think that a lot can be done at the state level, but I also think the federal government does have a role as well. So it's not an either-or issue, in my opinion. It's both and.
Since President Trump's statement, pro-lifers have been accused of moving the goalposts. The claim is that pro-lifers only wanted to make abortion a states' rights issue. Is this true?
No, that pro-lifers for a long time have always advocated for a federal role in protecting pre-born children. In 2003, President Bush signed into law the Federal Partial Birth Abortion Act that was upheld by the Supreme Court in 2007. We've also had federal legislation supported by almost every Republican senator that protect pre-born children after 20 weeks gestation. So, you know, we've had federal legislation that's been passed, signed, upheld. Again, I think that it's been pretty clear that pro-lifers have always felt the federal government has a role to play in protecting the pre-born.
So tell us about updated abortion estimates released by the Guttmacher Institute last month.
Yeah, sure. Last month, Guttmacher came out with some new abortion estimates for the year 2023. And what they found was that the number of abortions has actually increased. It has gone up by about 10% since 2020. You know, that said, I'm a little bit skeptical about this. First off, these estimates are not comprehensive. They're based on a sample, and I think they're going to have revised, more thorough, more detailed estimates later on. So for that reason, I'm a little bit skeptical. But according to their data, again, abortions have in fact gone up by about 10% since 2020.
What role does chemical abortion play in those increased numbers?
I think it's playing a large role. Guttmacher found that 63% of all abortions, more than three-fifths, 63% of all abortions are chemical abortions. So we've really seen a big increase in the fraction of all abortions that are chemical abortions. And there's a lot of policy changes that explain this. In 2016, the FDA changed a lot of the rules that govern chemical abortions. They lowered the number of physician visits. They also stated that chemical abortions could be obtained up to 10 weeks gestation. The previous limit was 7 weeks. So more pregnant women, tragically, could obtain chemical abortion pills. The Biden administration continued the COVID-era policy that allowed women to obtain chemical abortion drugs without an in-person medical exam. So there have been a variety of policy changes that have made policy pertaining to chemical abortions a lot more permissive. I think that's driven up the numbers of chemical abortions and driven the number of total abortions.
Does the increase mean that pro-life laws are ineffective?
No. Even if abortion numbers are increasing, it is possible that there could be an overall abortion increase, but that individual pro-life laws are in fact saving lives. We actually have three studies of Texas using birth data, which show that after the Texas Heartbeat Act took effect in September 1st, 2021, births went up. And I think that's very powerful, that abortions can be hard to count. Women can go out of state. They can self-induce. They can get chemical abortion pills through the mail. So counting abortions is hard. Counting births is pretty easy. So if we have good, reliable data showing that more women are giving birth, more children being born, that's pretty powerful evidence that the Texas Heartbeat Act is saving lives. And our figures show they've saved over 1,000 lives every month. Another study looked at birth data from a variety of states, found something similar, that in states that passed strong pro-life laws after Dobbs, more children are being born. That's, again, powerful evidence these laws are, in fact, saving lives.
Why should we be skeptical of data that has been reported by the Journal of the American Medical Association on increased demand for chemical abortion?
Right. They did a study that came out a couple weeks ago showing that there was an increased demand for chemical abortion pills from overseas vendors and requests from outside the conventional kind of medical system. I think we should be skeptical of that. I think that they're trying to push a narrative that efforts to limit or restrict chemical abortions are just doomed to failure. They also, a lot of this data was self-reported. It didn't come from a government agency. Again, these are online vendors that do have a vested interest to try to show that there is a high demand for chemical abortions. And also, just because a chemical abortion pill was requested or obtained doesn't mean a chemical abortion took place. Some women might have changed their minds. Some women might have just been requesting or ordering a pill for future use.
What was suspicious, in your opinion, about the timing of JAMA's report?
Well, that report came out the week of oral arguments in a Supreme Court case, FDA versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And we had a group of pro-life doctors suing the FDA about chemical abortion pills. We argued, and I think made good arguments, that a lot of the policy changes I described earlier were illegal. That, again, the FDA allowed women with pregnancies later gestation up to 10 weeks to obtain these chemical abortion pills. They allowed women to obtain these pills with fewer in-person medical visits. And we argued the FDA didn't really run the appropriate safety test to determine whether or not these new rules were in fact safe for women. So I think that it was attempted to impact either the decision of the court or the media coverage just to show that there's at least purportedly a high demand for chemical abortions, and attempts to place limits or protections are just going to be doomed to failure.
So tell us about a Canadian study on teen pregnancy and the mortality rates that was published last month.
Sure. An interesting study was done that looked at Canadian teens and how that affected mortality rates later in life. And what it found was that Canadian teens who get pregnant are more likely to die. If a Canadian teen's been pregnant once, she's 1.5 times more likely to die than her counterpart who did not get pregnant. If a Canadian teen got pregnant two or more times, she's twice as likely to die early as her counterpart who did not get pregnant. So it does kind of nicely show, and I hate to use the word nice, but it does show that teen pregnancy does have a risk to it, and that teens who get pregnant tend to experience kind of high premature mortality rates.
The report attempts to say, I believe, that those who have an abortion have a lower mortality rate. What's suspicious, or what do you question about that?
Yeah, the one finding I found a bit odd was that it found that Canadian teens who obtain abortions, they tend to have a lower mortality rate than Canadian teens who carry pregnancies to term. But I think there's reason to be skeptical of that. First off, when they look at the Canadian teens who obtain abortions, they also include Canadian teens who had miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies, and stillbirths. Those are all different things. So I don't think they should have lumped abortions in with those categories. Also, they really don't look at future income of these teens. I would imagine that Canadian teens who aspire to go to college, they were more likely to obtain abortions than Canadian teens who didn't have college aspirations. Teens who went to college probably earned higher incomes. There's evidence if you earn a higher income, you'll live a bit longer. So those are reasons why I'm skeptical of those findings.
What do we need to know about the overall maternal mortality rate?
Well, there's been new data released that shows it has not increased the way some claim it has. Original statistics claim the maternal mortality rate in the U.S. increased by over 143% since 1999. That's a big increase. This new data, you know, which has been corrected and clarified, shows that the maternal mortality rate increased by only about 2%. So that's a big difference. We went from claiming that the maternal mortality rate more than doubled to only a very slight increase of 2%. That's important. People often blame pro-life laws for high maternal mortality rates. I don't think the evidence really backs that up. But the fact of the matter is that maternal mortality in the U.S. is basically unchanged since 1999.
So an Alabama House seat flipped from Republican to Democrat, with the Democratic candidate running on abortion and IVF support. What does this mean?
Sure, that there was a state legislative race in Alabama. The Democrat won in a district that's usually won by Republicans. And many people are saying that this shows that because of the abortion issue and some of the controversy with IVF, this is going to work well for Democrats, you know, in other states. I'm a little bit skeptical of this. I think you have to actually look very closely at what happened in this race. First, the Democrat outspent the Republican by tens of thousands of dollars. That usually does not happen in state legislative races in Alabama. Secondly, the Republican dodged the issue of abortion. He didn't want to talk about abortion. I think that's always a bad strategy. Or we always have a saying in the pro-life movement, the ostrich strategy does not work. You can't stick your head in the sand. If you're pro-life, go ahead, make strong pro-life arguments. That's a much, much better strategy than avoiding the issue. Third, this is a fairly moderate part of Alabama. This district was in the Huntsville suburbs. Huntsville tends to attract a lot of people from out of state, tends to be more moderate. People there tend to have college degrees, earn higher incomes, are probably a bit more socially moderate. So I don't think it really reflects the rest of Alabama as a whole. So it's certainly, you know, worth paying attention to, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, Democrats winning a lot of state legislative races in conservative states like Alabama in the future.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Loeschler Institute, Paige Comstock Cunningham Fellow with Americans United for Life, and a columnist for National Review Online. You'll find a link to his columns on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. New, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
When we come back, Pastor Christopher Heaton's going to join us. We're going to talk about help for those struggling with the sin of pornography. He is author of Mentioning the Unmentionables, Naming the Corrosive Threat to Our Lives Together and Our Faithful Response in the Body of Christ. You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalist Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS operates the second largest parochial school system in the United States. What can you expect from a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school? There's one race, the human race. And Jesus died for the sins of every man, woman, and child from every land and every nation. Life begins at conception. All life is precious from womb to tomb. And every student, parent, and teacher is created in the very image of God. There's right and wrong, and we know which is which from the Ten Commandments. There are only two sexes, male and female, He created them. Marriage is the lifelong union of one man and one woman. There's such a thing as objective, absolute truth, and it's found in the person and work of Jesus Christ and His Word. To find a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school near you, visit lcms.org/schools